you steal our banner?
Wasn't me. My name is Brent, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brent! We love you, Brent! Lots and lots and lots!
Oh, shit. Heck yeah. I've been laughing all weekend. This is awesome. And dead tired, and I'm glad to see that you guys all suited up and showed, you know, you're here and with all your nice fancy shirts, and everybody's happy and smiling and laughing on the last day. I usually, every conference I've been a part of, I usually move before it starts, the work starts. The farthest I've gotten along was elections, and somehow I'm gone, so I feel guilty. And I honor you guys for being able to stick it out this whole weekend. I was here at 5 on Friday, and the energy level has maybe even increased since then for you guys. So somehow, you know, Monster and Red Bull, you know, it's good stuff. We're sober, you know. And Cedar Rapids has been a huge part of my sobriety. You guys don't know it. I've been lurking around in the background here and there, and recognized a ton of people. You know, I ended up was at the American Martyr Retreat. You know, I know Ryan from that. You know, I know a few people out there from that, and that was a spiritual experience. It's a necessary part of my you know, my program. You know, at least once or twice a year. Doing those retreats. I was up to Monticello for the sponsor retreat. And that was, wow, that you know, both of those retreats just absolutely blew my mind. You know, occasionally I work in Cedar Rapids, and, you know, I caught the noon meeting at some, I don't know, it was like a, it wasn't a club, but it was a club, but it was different than anything. It was like in a shopping outlet kind of thing. And it
Gratitude Club.
Yeah, it was it. It was, you know, it was, and it went longer, and I enjoyed every minute of it. It was my lunch break, and I love, you know, when it's my lunch break, I love them going a little bit longer, and it was good. So, no, I feel like I know all you guys, and it's just, it's been good. I, you know, Cedar Rapids is a great town. I did get a ticket from the camera on the S-curve out there. Yep, and it was right when they were kind of, do you pay it, do you know? There was a little thing going on in court about that, but I, you know, those nine-step amends, you know, I put them into all my affairs, and I still paid it, you know, and I wasn't resentful at all, you know, but I got a couple more tickets in Iowa, and the last one I got when I found out you could only get 3, and then they wanted to, you either have to go to driving class or take away your license, and as I started getting closer, the resentments, you know, I think on the second one, you know, I told the cop, I said, well, don't you know, it's not my driving, it's the speed limits. Every other state I've lived in, it's been 75 or 80, and it's 65. I'm like, are you kidding me? He said, when's that going to change? I said, he said, here's your ticket, dude. Don't get another one. And no, I learned a lot from that because I cried and whined about it, and I talked to a cop in the program, and he just said, you know, once you see people die from driving fast, it's, you know, it's no joke. And he put me in my place, and that's kind of what AA does, and you people do in AA, it just changes my perspective. You know, the Al-Anon speaker talked about that perspective in, you know, the new pair of glasses that always it just keeps happening. You know, the more I put into it, you know, I'm sick alone, you know, very sick, and the more I come around and do the work, the more my perspective, you know, becomes beautiful. You know, I was, you know, to start out, I think, you know, I was born in West Michigan, and, you know, my family was, you know, just the run-of-the-mill, middle-class family, you know, my dad, you know, I didn't know much about drinking. I knew, you know, whenever we went to my uncle's house and whatnot, wherever there was a big event, there would be, you know, on my mom's side, there'd be a big party, and everything would get a little wild, and, you know, and it was fun. And I lived in Traverse City, Michigan, and come to find out, we moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan when I was 7. Because my dad got a DUI, and everybody, this is a small town, so we had to move to a bigger town so he could drive around with no license, you know. I had no idea that was the case. And, you know, in So it's, I found out, you know, my dad, he, you know, was a hard drinker, and you know, did nothing that, you know, I didn't do later. But when I was about 11 or 12 years old, I came home, and my mom said, get in the car, we're going to grandma's house. What's going on, you know? And turned out, you know, my dad had got drunk with his bar buddies and flown to Vegas for a spur of the moment wedding with his friends at the bar, and my mom, that was enough for her. She's like, we're out of here. And we left, and you know, we're at my grandma's for about a week, and we came back, and you know, he hasn't had a drink since. You know, he's a hard drinker, and he hasn't had a drink. We just never talked about it. My uncles on his side, they're all way into their church, and they just don't drink. But you know, as I got older, I found out that there's a reason. You know, they don't drink because they can't. You know, and without consequences, and they were able to stop. You know, they were able to stop in the different ways. You know, and. Not so for me, you know, that thing with the Vegas deal, you know, I don't know. My dad quit drinking, and he never threw away a case of beer, and it was down by the furnace, and the first time, you know, I was about 12 or 13, I really didn't, you know, I was way into sports and everything else. I was wired a little bit different, you know. I always got in trouble. I was a guy that would see that what I was doing was a bad move, but just wouldn't stop doing it. You know, I was the guy that, you know, I mean, we were wild as kids. I had an older brother, and you know, we had BB gun wars, and that just wasn't smart. And you know, we'd throw rocks at semi trucks, and it was, you know, all that thing, all the stuff that you just don't do. And but I did it, you know. And whenever it was bad, like I remember throwing this rock one time, and being like, this is not good, and I threw it, and we were throwing it at the neighbor kids we didn't like, and they were throwing rocks back, and I just let it go, and I was like, oh my God, and it flew over the fence, and the kid moved, and it nailed his, like, four-year-old brother, just knocked him out, and blood everywhere. I'm like, oh no, and we ran away, and the cops came, and right then and there, my best friend and I were there, and I said, he did it, not me, you know. He did it, and I stuck to that, and that's the kind of guy I was, you know. And I never admitted it. You know, I lied. Whenever I got nailed for something, I just lied like crazy. You know, I, you know, and there was no alcohol involved. It was just, I just could not face up to consequences, and I just was wired to be way out there. And you know, that I brought that to school. I got lots and lots of trouble all the time. And so. My alcoholism was going with or without alcohol. You know, it was just I just couldn't behave, couldn't get it together, couldn't grow up. You know, I was told lots of times, grow up, Brent. And I just thought, how? You know, how do I do this? And the my dad never threw that beer out, and I thought it was a good idea, you know, one day when I was 12 or 13. To drink that. So we grabbed it, and we went down to the creek where we have the BB gun wars and throw the rocks at kids, you know, where all the mischief went down. And it was a hot day, and I remember cracking those beers, and it was pure foam. I mean, it was from the furnace, you know, it was by the furnace. It was like, this stuff was just pure foam, and we're just slamming it, you know, we're crushing this case. Me and my same buddy I threw under the bus, and I think there was another kid there, and you know, they stopped. They're like, this is nasty. Like, well, he didn't stop right away. He, you know, puked up foam. You know, I mean, we were just shotgunning him, crushing him, and he puked up foam, and I kept going, and I got drunk, and absolutely loved it. Was just like, oh, my God, this is what it's all about. You know, loved it. Was ridiculous, and, you know, from there on out, it was – there was no safe bottle anywhere, or, you know, beer bottle, whatever, at the neighbor's house, at friend's house. Whenever I saw it, you know, that was in my pocket, that was down my throat, I loved it. We met up, we rode our bikes to school instead of taking the bus, just so we could meet up and drink and smoke cigarettes and drink whatever we had, you know, and that's junior high. So I was off to the races immediately when I started drinking. That was a crazy year. It was, you know, I got 29 days of suspension from school, and 10 of those it was a good idea to smoke marijuana in the pool room while I was sitting out during gym class, you know, it was just a nightmare. But I had such a, the sports and the, you know, just really trying to be good. I just didn't know, you know what I mean? I just couldn't do it. They still were like, oh, you can go to the Cedar Point, you know, and do that. I mean, that was for like, if you didn't get any suspensions, you could go on the class trip. And they let all the other kids not go. And, oh, you can go. And then, you know, I had a big mouth then as I do today. And I just bragged about it. And all the bad kids' parents that couldn't go called and complained. So I didn't go to Cedar Point. And we just hung out and got drunk. That, you know, they all marched around from one person's house and they showed up like 20 kids showed up at my house, and we just all hung out that day while everyone was, you know, I was class of 450 and 20, 30 of us, and we partied, and that's, it never really stopped. It escalated. There wasn't a whole lot of consequences besides school. It was slowly taking me out of the extracurricular stuff, it took me out of school. I ended up having to go to a Catholic school and transferring in 10th grade because I was getting in so much trouble, not showing up, not doing homework, not doing any schoolwork. I could do good on tests. You know, I always tested to get in advanced stuff, but I just couldn't do the homework because the moment I left school, I was off to the races. You know, I just wanted to escape and wanted to feel good, and drinking and drugs, I felt great, and that's what I did. So I ended up going to a Catholic school that would fix me, you know, and that was interesting. You know, you've all heard, you know, wherever there's four Catholics, there's always a fifth, and that was definitely the case. I just found, all these guys, they partied like I partied. I lived in the suburbs. Went to school in the city, so, you know, I got a little bit into a business adventure with other stuff, bringing it to the city, you know, bringing it there, and that was all fine and good. And somehow I think the first big percussion where I kind of figured something was wrong with the way I was living was, before I would go to school, I was always drinking and doing other things. And I had art, I'd always make sure to have like art or something first period. And it was just ridiculous. But the first repercussion is I absolutely loved wrestling. You know, I loved all sports, very competitive. My brother, he got all the athletic ability, but I got the competitiveness, you know, and that was always good enough to, it was always good enough to, get on these teams in play that were really good. So the wrestling was a big deal. And where I went to, as it is in Iowa, I mean, the kids from my high school team, they all came to Iowa to go to the camps. You know, like Jay Robinson, they went, that's where a lot of people that were dead serious and focused, we all came to the camps in Iowa. So I moved from that big school that was a powerhouse at all the sports to that Catholic school, which was way smaller, and all of a sudden I was just a stud. I went from like a you know, somebody 20 pounds under the lowest weight class that was struggling out of 10 kids to be third string or whatever and make it to JV tournaments, and all of a sudden I'm in the city league, and I'm just destroying people and being rude about it, you know, like not even being, you know, like, it was like MMA, it's wrestling. Like, I got yelled at by parents, and I was out of control, and I was drinking and using and doing that stuff. And I had the best record on the team. At the end of the day at our banquet, you know, and I set a school record for the fastest pin. At the end of the day, I did not get elected by my peers to be captain. to be captain of the wrestling squad. And I showed them I never wrestled again. You know, I never, you know, it was the thing I loved. And, you know, that attitude, that alcoholic mentality, you know, that the twisted thinking, you know, I never wrestled again. And, you know, that was a big regret that I always, you know, I always go back on. And it just took me out of stuff, you know, it took me out of, and the other thing I did, you know, was theater. I absolutely love theater. I loved the, you know, I loved all this, that you got, you know, the lots and lots and lots of whole bunches, the laughter and everything, you know, I was charged on all that. Center of attention probably had a little bit to do with it, and I did it, and I did all that stuff really well, and I had fun, did a lot of Shakespeare stuff, and a lot of deal. I took it serious, but I, you know, would, when I wasn't on stage, I was outside, you know, drinking and smoking. I would do it drunk, and I actually ran over a stage crew person. I didn't even have my license, and I was drinking and driving in their car, and I ran over a stage crew person between my scenes, and it was just, you know, and their parents were there, a huge auditorium full, and I remember she's all bloody in her coat, you know, and you know, it was a bad deal. It was a bad deal. And, you know, I just never, that's the kind of stuff that I would do, and no remorse, no empathy, you know, nothing, just like, whatever, that was fun. And, you know, just really, really sick and twisted. And, you know, I had a scholarship for, you know, to go to DePaul and do that. And I blew it off, and I went to, got right into work. I got the summer between my senior year and when I'd start college, I got a zero tolerance, which, you know, is pretty much a drunk driving, 3 MIPs and a possession of marijuana, you know, and I think it was a month or two period, I got all that. So instantly probation, instantly I found out what it was like to be in the system. Had no idea that I was an alcoholic or there was anything to do with alcoholism. You know, I didn't get into, there wasn't a whole lot of repercussion besides the probation, and that slowed down. That was about the soberest I've ever been up to that point since I started. You know, and it was not AA sober, not even close. And I had to go to outpatient counseling with a bunch of people. I wore a, you know, looking back at it, I wore a Miller Lite shirt to the first one, a group counseling deal. And this was no joke. They were sending, there was a guy in there that was drunk, and he said, oh, I got a toothache, so I just put a whiskey on there, and he was all loud, and they sent him off to jail. There was like, you know, it was no joke. And so I went on the maintenance program. You know, it was, you know, I just, white knuckle, terrible, but that was the most sobriety, and it was, you know, 6 months, and I was absolutely off to the races again. I you know, I met up with, I got a bunch of, I moved out of my parents' house. I went to the community college. By then, I auditioned for a play at the community college, and I couldn't even get a part. Like, I was, like, shaking. I couldn't even, you know, I was gone. You know, I'm not a functioning alcoholic by any means. Failed all my classes. I think it was a point, 0.4. Somehow I got something in there, you know. It was maybe a D minus or something. It was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And my parents, you know, Adrian talked about that. My parents, you know, it's pretty bad when on Mother's Day, you know, you're 3 hours north of where you live, and you got to call your mom to come get you out of jail, you know. I mean, and then that was just, that's where I was at, just, and, but there was a lot going on with the economy there. Michigan's kind of a boom or bust place, and it was in a boom, and anybody, you know, I went to the decent schools, and anybody that was halfway decent could get a good job with all the construction going on. And I, you know, I ended up being an estimator, and all my buddies, I moved into a house and we were all in construction, bricklayers, builders, plumbers. I mean, there was like 5 of us in this house, and it was just, we were getting paid more money than we deserved, and we were just partying like rock stars. And I mean, I had a brand new truck for a month, and you know what happens with that, and But I didn't even have insurance on it. I totaled it, and I didn't even have insurance. And they were like, "You got to pay for that." And I was like, "You're crazy. You should have made me get insurance on it. You know what? You know, like, no, you know." And that, you know, it was all coming to a head, and I had no idea. You know, I had no idea that I was an alcoholic. And you know, I picked up a couple more DUIs, and I was back at my mom's house, and I knew I was going to lose my license for good, and that was going to be the end of it all. But I was tired. Between then and there, I'd been to court lots and lots of times. I've gotten a lot of stuff thrown out by cops before it even went to court, before I went to jail. It turned out I was going to jail or court at least once a month when I was 22 years old. I had a fake ID since I was 18. I don't know if we had any Canadians here, but, you know, and being in Michigan, we'd always go to Windsor, to Canada, drinking ages 19, and just black out and get stupid. And, you know, and that's what I was doing. I was blacking out, getting stupid, getting in fights, getting cocky. I was the guy that would just randomly throw an unopened beer at someone's head, you know, just to start it. You know, it was, like I said, I was just pitiful and incomprehensible, demoralization, just all these actions that I was doing were just ridiculous. And I had no idea. I absolutely had no idea. I was in such a fog that alcohol had anything to do with it. No idea at all. And but to take away my driver's license so I have no freedom to go where I want and do what I want was enough to plead guilty to that. I said, forget it. You know, I fought enough stuff. I lied my way out of enough stuff. I pled guilty to that. And By then I was living in my mom's basement. There was a salmon run, and I left that construction house, quit my job, and just went fishing for like a week and slept on the bank and was drunk. And no big deal, you know, and I had no job. And I was at my mom's house just totally taking advantage of the situation. She had been through a divorce when I was 18, and I didn't talk to my dad for years. I hated him because of that. We fought physically. And it was just, it was a big mess, and everything was a mess. And that part of the book where it talks about that our problems pile up on us seeming to be impossible to solve, like that was it, you know, I was screwed. You know, I realized I just can't get out of jail, court, being broke, kicked out, fighting, losing fights, you know, and I mean, I was losing fights. I've been to the hospital. You know, I got pistol whipped with a Glock, you know, pretty bad. You know, I got a picture of that. I have to dig up. You know, it's a miracle I'm alive. My mouth would just go. It would just go when I was out of it, blacked out. I remember almost having like out of body experiences at the wrong place, seeing the wrong stuff, where I could see my mouth moving and be like, "Dude, don't. You know, what are you doing?" And a lot of, I've got scars, you know, and it's a bad deal, but, you know, enough was enough. You know, enough was enough. I'm going to take this plea, I'm going to take this deal. I got a DUI in November, and I'm going to go to AA, so it looks good. I never been to AA in the construction world, about once every 6 months. At the beginning, we'd all get in a circle and pass around those slips, and we'd all sign them, just put gratitude on it, you know, at work. So that was my first AA, was just somebody was going to court, so we were just falsely signing their slips so they could get their driver's license back. By then I knew it was done. You know, I had moments where I knew it was done, and I just, you know, got that DUI in November, and knew I showed up, you know, a couple times, got all dressed up and went to go to a meeting and sat outside and never went, you know. My court date pushed it back to February. And I think in January 23rd, you know, I think I finally made it to my first AA meeting. And I'm telling you, I was something else. You know, I was looking down on everybody, you know, from the gutter. I remember my first meeting was at a place I guess they have it everywhere. It's a country thing or whatever. It's around the country, celebration recovery type place. And there was a meeting there and I rolled into it. And, you know, I was just like, what the hell? What a bunch of losers, man. I couldn't believe it. You know, I'm living in my mom's basement and I'm just like, what a bunch of, and this guy comes up to me with like no teeth and like a trench coat, you know, it looks like he crawled out of a trash can and he's just like, it keeps getting better. What the hell? I was like, what are you talking about? It keeps getting better. And, you know, looking down, that alcoholic ego is just out of control. Today, I have a tough time, you know, and, but I see myself in people when they come in, you know, like that. There's like you get these little moments where there's enough humility where they might hear, you know, something. And I was that guy. I had no humility. I was not hearing anything at all. You know, and I give you sign my slip, you know, and they signed my slip. And the next day I went to one actually in my neighborhood. You know, I went to a meeting in my neighborhood, and the lady cheering was my second grade Sunday school teacher, you know, and I'm just like, and she says, Brent, this is a little extra thing. This is a little extra that not everybody needs, but this might be good for you, you know. And, you know, I saw a bunch of, you know, people that were, you know, really living, you know, happy people, you know, they were really in their community, within the community, they were good people. I knew, I recognized them from around town and whatnot, and they all had lives, you know, and at that point, not drinking and starting, the fog starting to lift, and I see people coming back from college and buying houses and getting married, and I was like so far from that, you know, I'm in debt from totaling vehicles, you know, and living in my mom's basement. And when I didn't, I couldn't sleep, couldn't go to bed without being drunk. And I absolutely, that was a tough deal for me. It was, you know, I just, the insanity of being untreated alcoholism, you know, without anything, you know, without the alcohol to treat it was, you know, even though I was going to meetings, the insanity of it, you know, I got jail time, I got work release, I didn't even have a job, I don't know, God's so good to me, I didn't even have a job, so I got work release, and they brought A into the meetings, and, you know, I started going to school, and it was just nuts, absolutely nuts. Untreated alcoholism, it was just, not drinking is not an option, you know, and I ended up, one of those nights where I was just up all night, I ended up in my mom's basement. My brain's not, you know, it's going from, I'm going to cure cancer, I'm going to do this, I'm going to become a priest, I'm going to do, you know, so I got to do something, you know, just absolutely insanity. And it wouldn't shut off. And I remember I looked over at my gun cabinet and I said, that'll shut it off, you know, that. And, you know, right then and there, that's the next day after that. At those meetings, I started saying, I'm Brent, I'm an alcoholic. I knew, you know, that jumping off place that came with untreated alcoholism, you know, I knew that I was an alcoholic. There was no way, you know, when that thought came to my mind with all seriousness, it just, something happened. I knew that I had to do this deal, you know, I had to come in and do it. So I started going to a meeting every day. You know, I was like 90 and 90, you know, I was an overachiever. I'm going to do 120 and 90. And I, you know, would, you know, I was going, I think I did. And they're signing off. I'm still getting a slip signed. I have no driver's license. You know, we talked about the physical stuff we do when we first get sober, cause we're so insane. I'm riding my bike 20 miles to school, sign up for all these classes that I failed before. You know, hitting a noon meeting in Grand Rapids, hitting a meeting out in my hometown, Rockford, just north of that, and just super, super busy and in nuts. And you know, I finally went for a little bit, and it was somebody's birthday or some special occasion. I went out, and, you know, and I was like, man, I haven't drank in like 9 days, you know. I was like, I even made it through a weekend. I was like, yeah, I'm good, you know, I'm good. And I went to, you know, I went to my buddy's birthday party, you know, that house that I lived in, and they had a keg of Bells, and I'm just like, oh, you know, I was just like, before you know it, I'm like, no, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good. And, you know, and then we go out to go to the bar, instantly at the bar, and I didn't even know it, the insanity returned. You know, I just bought a tray of shots and was off to the races. You know, before the end of the night, you know, I'm peeing in a trash can. You know, I'm grabbing ass just to get into fights, you know, and it progressed in that 9 days. Like, I knew my alcoholism, I could see the progression in 9 days, you know, that I was worse than I was 9 days, you know, before that. And my timeline's a little bit screwed up, but it was nuts. So, okay, I'm going to meetings every day, you know, and that's not, I miss a meeting, so I double down and go to meetings every day, you know, and I'm good. And spring break comes up for school. I'm going to go visit my brother in Utah and go skiing, you know, and I go to a speaker meeting. I come up to the meeting, and I'm just like, there's a guy, you know, this heavy hitter I didn't even know, says something. I hear something. I go up to him after the meeting, get my slip signed, and I'm like, man, that was a good deal. I'm going on this spring break trip, you know, and I'm flying out tomorrow. He says, dude, you can't go. I was like, what are you talking? I'm like, I already got plane tickets, you know, I'm going. He's like, you can't go. You're gonna get drunk. And I'm like, what? And the moment I stepped on the plane, I ordered a shooter and I got drunk. And I was insanely drunk. I'm talking when my brother, you know, I was at his work, and I'm going, and he was, my brother, his story's different, but at that time, he was a ski bum, and he was washing dishes, and I'm back in the kitchen yelling at everybody, all the servers, you need to tip my brother out better, he does, you know, I'm back there doing that, I'm skiing under a full moon, you know, in Utah, I'm just insane, and, you know, I peed on a couch, you know, my somebody else's couch, you know, it was the deal, and I instantly knew right then and there that I knew that I got to an AA meeting. I went to an AA meeting, and I said, okay, meeting every day doesn't do it. This every day, you know, does I need a sponsor? So I got a sponsor and began working the steps. And the that was April 17th. Of 2004, and I haven't had a drink since. It was that combination. It was just unreal. So we, you know, from there it was, you know, we're running out of time here. God, what a long drunkalogue. But I'm blaming it on all the readings. But the, you know, that's where life really started. I'm not kidding you. I mean, right then and there, when I wasn't at a meeting, I was going through the literature. You know, I wanted to get better. I wanted so bad to get better. You know, I was hurting, and it was a miracle I was alive, and I knew it was a miracle. And, you know, I jumped into the step work. I jumped into meetings. I got with the old timers. They started, you know, the guy I called from Utah to be my sponsor, him and this other guy came to my house and picked me up, you know, and I lived in the suburbs. Nobody was picking me up to bring me to the bars anymore, and these two old guys were coming to my house, 12-stepping me on the way, you know, and I always, and they were bringing me to a meeting every day, and I was telling them, you know, I called them at 10 years sober. I said, hey, man, thank you so much for picking me up, you know, thanks for picking me up every day and listening to me whine in your car all the way to the meeting and all the way back. And he just looked at me, he said, Brent, we weren't listening, we were having our own conversation in the front. You know, like, what the hell, you know, and I'm telling him about all my poaching stories about deer and fishing, and he's a retired DNR, you know, and he didn't take me into jail or anything. You know, he said, this program's all about honesty, but you can lie about the size of fish you catch, is what he's saying, because we know you're going to do that anyway. And, you know, those guys, they brought me through the steps. That fourth step was a bitch. It was so hard. That I fired him. I was like, it's your fault that I can't do this four step. This is your fault. And I got another sponsor, and the two of them talked, and you know, and I'm like, I'm on the four step. And he says, no, you start over at one again. One. I was like, man, I went to Catholic school. I'm at three when I came in. What do you mean back to one? And the ego deflation that happens in those first three steps, you know, I was not a guy that you needed to say love yourself to. No, I love myself. That's all I loved. You know, I love myself. I couldn't even see anything else from it. Those ego deflation that came from the first three steps is unreal. So that second sponsor, you know, we're out there, and I had, you know, I'm no different than anyone else. You know, Adrian talked about it. I had a spiritual experience on that third step. You know, we're at that place where I saw my Sunday school teacher. We're at that meeting that became my home group. Somehow, everybody ended up in the suburban town with like 20, 30 years of sobriety from all over the country, all different places, all over the country, all over the world. And it's a big book study. It was just like an unreal place to, you know, to get sober. And I could listen, I could hear, you know, I was teachable. And, you know, and he said, we're walking around, it's by a library. You know, he said, you memorize that third step prayer? Yeah, I got it memorized. You know, he said, well, let's get on our knees and say that prayer. It was the same experience as Adrian. I'm no different, you know. Except for I was like, you know, I'm going to get on my knees, you know, in front of all these people. And I got khakis on and get grass stains on my khakis, you know. So it was, but I got down on my knees and I did that. You know, I did that. I saw that, you know, everything that I was doing, he made me write down everything I was doing. And then I chose to drink. I saw the insanity of it. And it gave me the power to do that third step, to realize that God could do for me what I couldn't do for myself. Back at the four step, diligently just plugged away at it, just absolutely going for it. I made a serious mess out of it. Did it out of the big book, did it out of the 12 and 12, did it with a Hazleton 12 four step guide. But I kept doing it, you know what I mean? I had an encyclopedia of stuff, and, you know, and they were just like, you know, and I went with my sponsor. And I sat down to do that fifth step, and he pulled the chair up, and he said, it's me, you, and God. God's in this chair. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, I'm like, what? You know, and I wasn't there. I held off on some of the most important stuff for my sobriety. I held back in that promise. I knew the literature inside and out, and it did not come, the promise did not come true. You know, I did not feel like the alcohol had been removed. You know, it did not feel like that at all. You know, I was miserable, absolutely miserable. And here comes the old guy, you know, here comes the old guy. He says, Brent, you know, different guy than I did the fifth step with. He says, Brent, you know, I'll get your, he comes, shows up at my house. He says, get your encyclopedia stuff. You're coming with me. I know your background. And he brought me to, down to the west side in Grand Rapids, to these big long stairs. He said, go up there. There's a priest in the program named Father Dick. Go up there and be honest, you know, don't leave out anything. And so I did that. I went up there and guy's in his full garb and the whole deal, you know, his robe and everything. I'm like, who is this? And you know, and I didn't leave out those juicy details, and he wasn't nice about it, you know. He let me know that's terrible, you know, that's wrong, you know, and you know, he just, you know, I got him to flinch on one. I was like, geez, you know, and it's like, oh my God. I'm like, it says in the book, you just tell me about your experience that's the same, you know. And no, he let it rip. And you know, he brought me all the way to the seventh step prayer. You know, we said the seventh step prayer, and you know, he also gave me the absolution of sins, and holy shit, that's when I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. I am never, that promise came true, you know, the desire, I know exactly when that desire to drink was gone, you know, as long as I followed it through nine and kept in fit spiritual condition, it was gone. I was on a cloud, a pink cloud, and it was absolutely unreal. And he was gone, the old guy that dropped me off was gone. And I'm in the west side of Grand Rapids, like, what the hell? And, you know, luckily I called somebody from my home group, you know, this lady from my home group, and was like, you know, I just did a fifth step, and I'm down here at the church, and my ride took off on me. And she swung by and grabbed me and brought me to a meeting. And it was just, you know, I told them, I'm like, I just did a fifth step, and I am walking on, and they were just like, heck yeah. And I was like, that was like a clicky group that we, you know, that I went to. I never went to that meeting before, and I just felt same plane. I was the same, you know. I was not unique. I was not no better, no less than anybody. And, you know, and that's, you know, I encourage anybody, you know, whenever, you know, just do the hardest stuff first, because that's what changed my world. And you know, I haven't had a desire to drink since. And I went through all the way to 9. You know, I went to my employer. I stole this stuff from you. I had your guys doing my own work. You know, I contracted this. I stole your, you know, this and that. And you know, I went to that Ford Motor Company and said, hey, man, I'm a drunk, you know, and I need to pay this. And I didn't even have a job, you know. And somehow I paid that truck off in less than a year, you know. And somehow I had only 13% of people with 2 DUIs at that time got a breathalyzer and a restricted license. And boom, I went in there, you know, just like Adrian. I went in there and she had my whole record laid out across her desk. Deborah and the DOT lady, I said, it's been a year, you know, I did the paperwork, and she had it all laid out. And she said, you know, I brought my sponsor there, and she said, you know, why do you think I should give you your driver's license back? This is what you do. And you know, he went in there, my sponsor went in there, and he's like, God this, God that, spiritual experience. I'm like, whoa, we don't just say that. We don't talk like that, you know, and normal. This is, you know, we don't just throw that stuff around. And she said, shut up. She's like, you don't know how lucky you are to have that guy in your life. I was like, whoa. I got my breathalyzer, I got my driver's license back, you know. You know, and I drove the speed limit, you know. I drove the speed limit then for a long time. And I even had to, I was at an AA function and it wouldn't work. It was a blow and hum deal. I don't have that down, and never did. And it didn't work, and I had a stick, and I popped the clutch and took off. And I was going to AA all the time. And then I had a license, so I was going to young people's. And that's a little bit different than smoking cigarettes with old guys, you know, and doing that. It was just like, oh man, it was awesome. The young people's in Grand Rapids, you know, probably 60 people on Sunday nights, minimum. We always go out afterwards, always to people's houses, job, no job, money, you know, girlfriend, no girlfriend, absolute riot. My 20s were amazing. I got sober at 23, and oh my God, I was involved with young people's, all that stuff. And it was the conferences, the campouts, the kickball meetings, the Barbie Jeep races, you name it. We did it, and it was unreal. And we did went to the conferences, the outreach, everything. And you know, and somehow you know, in college, you know, I went to Western Michigan University, and I hit another jumping off place where it was like, I go out with my friends I know to these bars and shoot pool and drink Coke, or I call the 1-800 number and find out where the hell these meetings are in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And I call the meetings, and boom, there's in Kalamazoo, Michigan, there's AA Young People's. That's even bigger, you know, even more people in it. And they want that Mickey paw. They want the state convention in Kalamazoo. And I jumped in that, and every weekend I'm surrounded by sober people. I've been through the steps, so I start sponsoring guys. You know, we're doing it. We're having an absolute blast, and we got the convention in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and it was unreal. It was engineering classes were a pain in the ass, and I nobody told me easy does it, and I was doing engineering class. I was doing those meetings. You know, and I decided, you know, someone came up to me and I said, but you don't understand. As it says in the book, I am an actor. You know, I've never been a director, but I'm an actor. They said, Brent, what are you doing now? Nothing. So I went down to show them. I went down to the Kalamazoo Civic Theater, and I got a lead role in a play that sold out for a month. And, my name was in the paper, and, you know, it was just not good for the ego, but it was, you know, it was absolutely unreal. And those guys did it, you know. They did it too. They went out for the next plays, and they all got in plays, and they, you know, it was contagious. Everything was on contagious, and I was on fire. I got burned out too much, too quick, and I surrendered back to my parents' house, and I ended up just wandering the woods, you know, looking for mushrooms with my dog, you know, just like, man, I was just burned out. I needed to just go in the woods away from people, still going to AA meetings. My parents were like, what's wrong with you? You need a job, or you need to go to school, or you need to do something else. And the alcoholics, you know, I was too good for any, like, normal part-time job that a college kid has. And until I went to this meeting at Bond Street, and everybody worked at Lowe's. And they're like, come on, Brent, work at Lowe's. And I went there with my resume, and they gave me a commercial estimating job. So I'd help the contractors figure out all their stuff. And so I didn't, you know, but I had to wear a vest, you know, and that was just the human. I had long hair then and wearing a vest. And I never had a real job where you had it, couldn't smoke cigarettes all the time and everything else. And we had a blast. We would bumper cars with the high lows, bumper cars with the high lows and fights. And it was unreal. Working with drunks was unreal. And, you know, another guy that, you know, I always had got jobs through somebody always needed help. I didn't want to work, but they said, come along, Brent, you're going to work. And they did that. And, you know, and I ended up, somebody from my home group with like 30 years sobriety, this lady that was just unreal, helped so many people out, brings them in to live in her house. And she said, she introduced me to this girl and said, you know, she's kind of in the same boat as you, you know, why don't you hang out? And I, you know, went on one date with her and boom, you know, we were married for 10 years. And, we both got through school together. I got an engineering degree and she got all the way to her dissertation for her master's degree in geology. And, you know, we did Mickey Paw together. We did, you know, we did meetings together. We went all over the country. She worked for NASA. I worked on the West Coast, building bridges and highways in the Pacific Northwest. And everywhere I went to meetings all over the country. And, to make a long story short, that one didn't work out perfect. And we have two kids that are, you know, that I'm a full-time dad to now. And, you know, she didn't kill me and I didn't kill her. So I think it was a success. It was a successful deal thanks to the program, you know. And, you know, today, you know, with that, you know, with all the stuff that's going on, I know what it takes for me to keep growing, you know. I'm not going to fail to enlarge my spiritual life. You know, when this stuff comes up, I'm here. You know, when somebody asks me to do something, I'm here. I'm in my little home group there in DeWitt, Iowa. You know, I'm at these retreats. You know, I canceled my plans, whatever I got going to get to these retreats to enlarge my spiritual life, you know, to live on 10, 11, and 12. You know, that's the only chance I got. I am nuts, and I, you know, I'm somewhat sane today when I do those things, you know, and I am, you know, I'm capable of all seven deadly sins, you know, it talks about in the 12 and 12, like all of them, like, no, you know, a blink of an eye, I could do all seven, you know, I'm telling you, I'm just like all you guys, you know, but I keep that all at bay. I keep my alcoholism at bay by living in 10, 11, and 12, and the results, it just, like that guy, I know what that guy with the dirty coat and no teeth, you know, I know what, when he said it keeps getting better, I know what he's talking about today. You know, it can get as good as I want it to get. You know, the more I put into it, the better it is, you know. And when things are uncertain, I put them into God's hands, and it works out better than I could ever imagine. Great things have come to pass, great things. You know, kid with ADD does not deserve an engineering degree. I do not deserve the awesome jobs I've had, the amazing job I have now. I mean, but I'll take it, you know, I'll take all that stuff, and it's an absolute blessing, and I want to keep it, so I'll pass it forward. You know, I appreciate it, I appreciate Maureen asking me to speak. I mean, this is any way I can give back to this program that's given me a life that is truly amazing. You know, I've been all over the country, I've done things, I just can't even believe, you know, and it's just keeps getting better. And that's all I got. Thank you. Wow.